Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio. And a warm welcome to Afternoons with Me. I'm Bill Arnold. I am so glad to be joined in the studio this hour by Todd Mullican. He is a counselor and author and speaker, and he can be found at toddmullican.com, M-U-L-L-I-K-E-N, Mullican. There we go. We're going to talk about something quite difficult today. I don't think it's for, I don't think we have to shield anyone's ears, but it's certainly a very difficult topic. We're going to talk about healing after betrayal. And betrayal can come in many different forms of, it can be emotional, sexual, it can be all kinds of things, but we're going to really focus on, you know, can a marriage survive an affair? It's a very difficult subject. And if you have questions and you want to talk to Todd about it, you can, of course, remain anonymous. You can send a text as well. Or you can email me, bill@myfaithradio.com. I'll ask the question on your behalf. We are going to talk about it, why it happens, and how love can be restored. Certainly one of the most earth-shaking things that can happen in a couple's life. So we will take 60 seconds, and then we'll bring Todd on.
For many of us, the first thing we do when we wake up in the morning is reach for our phone. What if the first thing you saw on it was a Bible verse? You can easily make this happen. Just visit myfaithradio.com and click on Verse of the Day. Submit your information and you'll get a daily text message of hope and encouragement straight from God's Word. You can also register by texting the word VERSE to 555-888. That's VERSE to 555-888 for the Faith Radio Verse of the Day.
It's encouragement and hope for your daily journey. Faith Radio.
I was a baby believer when I started listening, and I think it's attributed to my growth in my walk. I listen to the Faith Channel all day long, so I even listen repeat, you know, later in the evening. So
it encourages me every single day, and it teaches me. I learn from all your guests as well as everyone else does.
We're connecting faith and life together. Faith Radio.
Thanks for joining me today. It's always great to be spending time with you. You're awesome. I've got Todd Mullican in the studio. We're going to talk about affairs, betrayal, and can a marriage survive it? And Todd, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
Let's maybe chat about why they happen.
Well, in a book I wrote a while back called The State of Affairs, I did research on it for a while, and there's I found about five different types of affairs and why they happen. And one is more of a double life person where they've had a pattern of cheating throughout their story. Mm-hmm. Usually it was modeled by a parent. And so they're repeating that pattern. It has nothing to do with their marriage, if you will. So that's a common pattern, is more of living a double life, having multiple affairs. The other one that I see a lot of and is somebody that is has an one-time affair around halftime of their life, mm-hmm. or 15 to 20 years into marriage, where they usually grew up as kind of a pleaser type, and then in their marriage they operate as a pleaser type and unintentionally are building up a resentment bank of feeling controlled by their partner or their spouse over a long period of time, and eventually fall prey and vulnerable to an affair, and that is really hard to work through because they mm-hmm. take a long time to get into the affair and they take a long time to get out of it if they ever do. So I see that as a very common type of affair. The other one I call the affair that doesn't happen, but it's kind of that emotional affair. So somebody is thinking about, God, that neighbor treats their spouse better than my spouse treats me, and they don't, instead of kind of talking that through and letting their spouse in and not, you know, just trying to have a reasonable dialogue about, golly, here's what I was noticing. They kind of keep that to themselves and kind of start this other life slowly but surely about an emotional connection with this other person. And they may not even pursue that into an actual affair, Bill, but they, it's in their emotions, it's in their body, and it's in their mind, and it just distances themselves from their partner.
They start detaching. Hmm?
Yeah, and then they start building a resentment bank account, and they start really viewing their spouse differently. You know, they start to, which we all do when we're in any kind of sin, we all kind of want to justify and blame. And so that's, those are, you know, three of the most common types of things, types of affairs I've seen over the years.
Todd, is it safe to say these happen incrementally?
Mm.
I mean, the enemy's not going to say, go have an affair.
Right.
He's going to say, why don't you stop by that person's desk and tell them something really nice.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so oftentimes we all have a need to be validated by others, and instead of receiving our validation from God, we sometimes want to get that from others. And so some folks that are vulnerable to emotional or sexual affairs are trying to receive validation from others. The home life is feeling a little bit flat, and so they start receiving validation from that person at the desk, and they make an intentional choice to kind of go by there and just kind of see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Rolling the dice a little bit.
Yeah. There was a book by an author, and I did not read the book, but the title caught my attention, and it was called When Godly People Do Ungodly Things. Mm. And obviously, you can fall to sin, and you can be deceived, and you can all of a sudden be in the midst of violating your marriage covenant. And when that happens, Todd, it's how often can couples restore?
You know,
I know that's your
great
business.
So that's a great question. And it's statistics are all over the map. But just a couple, I mean, statistics generally say 40 to 60% of couples have some type of emotional or physical affair involved at some point in their life. I mean, that sounds
40 to 60?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds really high.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
So no, I don't know for sure, but. But then I think what the other statistic is that's most scary, and that is that 65% of people that go through it end up in divorce. And then the research also suggests that of the 35% that stay together, only 25% of that 35% end up having a really good marriage. So what I've noticed is that it really can be a defining moment for the marriage in a way that just crushes it and ends up being a deal breaker. But for the couple that is all in, and the adulterer is truly remorseful and is truly repentant and is truly looking in their own mirror versus, you know, pointing the finger. And if the betrayed spouse over time, not overnight, can pursue trust and pursue forgiveness, that is kind of the way the table probably needs to be set if recovery is going to happen. None of that's easy overnight.
That sounds like one of the key words, if the betrayed spouse can. That's the big one, isn't it?
It's certainly a big part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly is, because what you notice early on in the story, let's even say the person who had the affair really, truly has genuine remorse, and they are like actually grateful they're out of this trap of this affair. So they're feeling freed. They're feeling hopeful. They're feeling like they want to restore. Well, so they're in that time zone, Bill, of really wanting things to get better. Whereas their spouse, now just hearing about this, is in a completely different time zone of just trying to gather all this in. And that first 3 to 6 months minimum of recognizing the time zone difference is really important for the couple. Mm-hmm. How do we recognize, and if you will, respect the time zone difference? How do I respect if I'm the one that did the cheating and I am all in and I want to heal and I am really, really sorry and I'm showing them everything they need to see from this past 6 month affair. I need to have so much empathy to understand just how that other person who I betrayed is taking all of that in now. And I need to know that any trigger they have over the next several months, sometimes several years, is never a step back. It's a part of the healing process.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then if I'm the betrayed person, how am I doing not rushing through the trauma, but also not being defined by this? How am I doing trying to lean in and receive comfort from the Holy Spirit to try to receive discernment about how do I trust over time or not? How do I see the value of forgiveness because the alternative is worse?
Mm-hmm.
So those are some early things that are going on in the story of a couple that's gone through this process.
Mm-hmm. From your time in the office counseling couples, what is the betrayed person thinking and understanding about the betrayal?
Well, naturally, they're, of course, you know, feeling betrayed and feeling, you know, overwhelmed mm-hmm. and feeling deep feelings of inadequacy, sometimes deep feelings of rage. And, you know, oftentimes my experience, Bill, is that if this person who has been betrayed has also been betrayed earlier in their life, or if they've been through earlier life trauma, it is even doubly as difficult because now they're experiencing all of that trauma again.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's a big word, trauma, isn't it?
Right. Their mother left them. And so now their partner, you know, their spouse has cheated on them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it's just so loud and the PTSD symptoms are overwhelming. So there's things like just feeling overwhelmed, inadequate, insignificant, just so much rage and hurt. And that's all normal feelings when mm-hmm. somebody feels betrayed.
Mm-hmm. What is a reasonable boundary when someone's discovered that they've been betrayed?
Well, I think, you know, they need to, as they feel safe, to share what that feels like and what they need right now.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes they need space.
Yep.
Sometimes they need, we are going into couples therapy and figuring it out. Sometimes, hey, I don't want to spend time with you for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see my own therapist individually. Mm-hmm. So I clearly personally do not think it's like, here is the way to do it. It's not one size fits all here. People have different stories and... but they need to give themselves permission to take time to sort out this betrayal and what they're feeling.
Certainly a difficult subject and one that is so sensitive, so we're very aware of all of that. Todd Mullican is in studio. And if you would like to have us respond to a question you have, you can certainly call or text. If you'd like to remain anonymous, of course you can. We would just love to get your input so we can have your question discussed. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. We'll be back in 90 seconds. I've got Todd Mullican in our studio, and we're talking about what happens when there's a betrayal in the relationship. And he's written a book called The State of Affairs. He wrote that many years ago. I have one copy that I'd be more than happy to send on to a listener. I've only got one copy, so it'll go fast. Bill at My Faith Radio, send that. Make sure you put your name and address if you win, and just put Todd in the subject line, and I'll know you're talking about Todd's book. All right, Todd, so let's talk about the person. We just chatted about the person that was betrayed. Let's talk about maybe what's going on in the mind of the betrayer.
Okay, so again, it's not one size fits all here, but I think in general what happens to the person who's doing the betraying is that the minute they start emotionally connecting with the other person that they're having an affair with, the minute they do that, they are starting to even view their spouse in an even worse way in order to justify the pattern that they're starting, in order to sleep at night. And one of the things I've noticed a lot is, well, there's 9 symptoms of narcissism, but the second one talks about being preoccupied with fantasies of power, brilliance, success, beauty, and ideal love.
Mm-hmm.
So what ends up my experience with folks in general that are having the affairs, they start being preoccupied with the fact that they have found ideal love. And out of that sense of being haughty, if you will, and arrogant about that, they usually really develop an even worse view of their spouse.
Wow.
And so
it just gets worse.
Right. And so that's the worst stuff that's happening. Okay. Now, earlier in the show, I mentioned like, hey, The other part that you see sometimes is the person is actually freed and realize this was the worst mistake they've made in their life and have genuine remorse. It was a one-time thing, and they can't believe they've done it. And you know, they just have so much shame and, you know, feeling, you know, we talked about the betrayer, the betrayed feeling overwhelmed, but sometimes the betrayer who actually is remorseful feels completely overwhelmed, completely inadequate. You know, how could I have done this to my covenant? You know, how will God forgive me? How will my spouse ever forgive me? So there is those folks too, clearly. So again, the betrayer themselves have different things that happen after the betrayed, after the betrayal has been found out.
I think it's safe to say, Todd, that sin is so complicated, isn't it, in its all of its ugliness and sadness.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that's probably most difficult, Bill, is that, you know, in a perfect world which you don't live in, ideally, what we like when I'm working with couples in premarriage counseling or early on in their marriage is one of the things they get to do is if they start feeling vulnerable to something, they, this sounds maybe backwards, but they let their spouse into some of the vulnerability they're feeling. Like, and that way now we have our safest places with each other, even if we're feeling vulnerable to stepping outside the marriage. I don't want to do this. What's going on? I'm letting my spouse in. This is horrific. I'm not there yet. I'm feeling better. I don't want to do this. And they talk together and they pray through it. And that's, so most couples don't develop a pattern together where when there is a start of a feeling of wanting to get involved with somebody else, that instead of kind of letting that continue, they immediately say, what am I doing? And how do I go to my spouse with this? Or how do I go to my best friend with this and say, hey, you know, hold me accountable. This is not okay.
Yeah. All right, Todd, here's a caller that said, if you've been married 20 years, your husband has had nothing to do with you for the last 10. He won't talk. He hides his phone, his money. He does all the cooking, cleaning, et cetera. It's basically like just having a roommate. Are you smelling anything there?
You know, what was the, maybe the question back would be, what was the first 10 years like? You know, was there something that happened that made the last 10 different than the first 10?
That's a good question.
And if there was kind of a noticeable shift, then we're looking for something that's happened there. And yeah, you know, we certainly any hiding, any omissions, you know, affairs don't have to be kind of this person who's out there and rolling the dice and being, if you will, a player. They could be covert, you know, under the kind of don't look at my phone, you know. So, yes, distancing oneself and feeling like they're home but nobody's home could be a sign that something's going on. It's reasonable to think that.
Mm-hmm. All right, when separation or divorce occurs, how do you limit the impact for the kids?
Well, age of the kids matters, but overall I say be honest with the kids, but don't put something on the kids. And what I mean by that is we never want to put the kids in the middle of our own stuff. We never want to, you know, throw our spouse under the bus. We never want to bring our, you know, one of our children who's an adult in or an adolescent in and say, hey, you know, here's what's going on and here's what I'm feeling. Because now we're, instead of being honest with our kid, we're putting something on them. We're making them kind of choose how are they supposed to handle that, right? So if I'm doing that, then I'm really putting my own stuff onto them. I need, if they're asking me questions about, hey, you know, did daddy, did mommy cheat on you? You know, that's about as hard as it gets, you know, and ideally the person who has, you know, so there's been cheating, but there's also usually been other things going on in their marriage that haven't been good. So where do you go with that? But mostly what you're doing is saying, we love you. This is not about you. These are things that dad and mom are trying to figure out, and we haven't been able to do it. We love you. We're for you. So we don't want to put the kids in the middle because then they take that to their next train stop. And now they're more defined by that versus they need to go out and play and know the truth that mom and dad are struggling, but their life is going to not be the same because they're in a divorced home now or they're living in separated homes, but their life as a 13-year-old, as a 17-year-old, is kind of still, they're still doing their friends, they're still doing their youth group, they're still having supports. That makes sense, versus the parents' stuff kind of breathing into them, and now they have to take that on and be the social worker and be the pastor in the home and grow up way too fast.
Todd, just to add something to what the previous caller, the one that had the 20-year marriage with 10 years that were not good, she also wanted to add that he wants to pray with her, but she won't because he basically has nothing to do with her. So it sounds like there's a little bit of pushback and hurt that So now you want to pray with me. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really hard. And again, I'd ask the person that's praying to say, well, you know, I want to pray, but I also want to model what Jesus would have me do. So let's show, let's not just pray, let's show the faith. And so I'm hearing from my spouse that she feels lonely and unconnected with and doesn't want to pray. So, I think God would want me to maybe pray that I work on coming towards her. Does that make sense? So, and then the person who's being feeling betrayed and feeling left out there, if they start seeing some of that movement, then we want to invite them in to pray too.
Mm-hmm. Now, Todd, you would probably the first to say that your spouse and you are either growing together or apart, right? You've said that before on the show. So maybe we can start with talking about the kinds of tools that will keep marriages strong and more a fair proof. Because I think if we try to be more proactive here, we can use our time in such a productive way.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, you know, affairs are the number one cause of divorce.
So yeah, it's so painful to talk about them.
Right, and we don't get married to get divorced. So,
right.
So the thought would be is what are we for in marriage and how are we building, how are we coming towards each other in Christ? Because oftentimes what happens with the typical marriage is it gets fairly transactional in the raising of children. And so we're kind of slowly growing apart without noticing it. And then once we notice it and want to pay attention to it, we're vulnerable to having resentment bank accounts build up and, you know, hurt people at that point. So ideally what we're trying to do early on is create buoys, I call them, just life-giving places to go in Jesus, to date well, to have daily sharing, to take time for spiritual connection and pray and take time to worship together and take time to make love. And we're for these things, and we want to pursue them in intentional ways. We want to create a safe place to have disagreements. Conflicts aren't bad. They're not wrong. So we want to build things that are beautiful, but we also want to have a safe place to know that we can let each other in about difficult things. And and if we're for that and we're intentional about that, then usually affairs are, you know, a ways off. They're not hanging around as much because our eyes are towards each other.
Yeah, nicely said. All right, Todd Mullican's in the studio, and we would love to have your questions. If you've had betrayal in your life and you've suffered and you would like to ask a question, I know it's a very delicate subject, and I'm kind of trying to spit out my words as I speak, because you can, of course, remain anonymous, but we also want to give you encouragement, and we want to give you hope, and we want to help as best we can on a radio show. So 877-933-2484 is the number if you'd like to call, and you can text that number as well, or you can email me, bill@myfaithradio.com. Again, the number is 877-933-2484. After a short break, we'll be right back.
WSP.edu/MBA data.
Thank you for being with me today. We're talking about a very difficult, sensitive subject, which is marital betrayal. And when that strikes, it pretty much shatters everyone's mind and world. And that's what we're talking about today with Todd Mullican. And if you've got a question, there are lots of good questions coming in, so I'm thankful that I can start getting to them right now. Let's go to Michael in Sioux Falls. Has got a question. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hi there.
Hi. Got a question for Todd.
So, I do have it. So my question is, I try and keep my guardrails up extremely high. I've been married for 1 year. I'm 63 years young, Christian for about 4 years and 5 months, and sober for that same length of time. With my guardrails trying to be up, there was an occasion the other day where I took a long second look at somebody, and I know that that's wrong, and I feel terrible about it. Is that committing adultery? I mean, I wasn't real long. I just looked and then looked back and went, oh, and then caught myself. Is that committing the adultery right then and there? How close? I don't want to come close to that rail. I want to keep my rails up so I could use some information on how to keep my rails higher so I don't get into that position again.
Yes. I like you, Michael. Go ahead, yeah, Todd.
Great stuff, Michael. I mean, I think, first of all, I just want to congratulate you on your sobriety. Well done. And
Thank you.
You bet. And I think what I'm enjoying about what you're saying is that you're asking the right questions, right? You're saying, boy, something wasn't right here. And that's the spirit, in my opinion, about, you know, God's gentle conviction going, oop, this isn't right, you know. And so we can split hairs over if was that actually, you know, an actual affair or adultery. But most importantly, you feel convicted by it, and that keeps the guardrails up. Does that make sense? You're not going to that next step of going, boy, you know, that was a second look, and it really wasn't that big a deal, and so nobody really got hurt. And that's usually where the adulterer goes, is kind of the minimization of that act. And so I just want to encourage you to stay humble and stay intentional, come towards your wife before her, love her as Jesus does, and that would be my advice for you.
Great question, Michael.
I have to tell her about that this evening. Have any ideas on how to approach that conversation?
Well,
she might even be listening.
Surely. Well, I would let
problem
her
solve then.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I would just promote humility and ask for forgiveness and ask and listen to what she has to say and listen to what she has to feel and try to slow down and let yourself listen and validate what she's experiencing so you can literally or figuratively hold her through that time and be patient.
Amen.
With that. Okay.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
All right. All right, Todd, let's talk about betrayal that happened a long time, spouse, multiple affairs. And then the one who was betrayed is having a difficult time with the kids. They're more supportive of the one that did the betrayal and not as warm to the one who was betrayed. And, you know, tried to save the marriage. But that must be really painful.
It is. God, that's a great. I'm really glad that person texted in, because that's a really common issue out there where, you know, when the marriage doesn't work after the affair and the betrayed person is doing their side of the street well and promoting forgiveness and trying to move forward, and the betrayed person continues in the affair or doesn't want it to work. And, you know, and sometimes I find that kids will, you know, unintentionally kind of feel sorry for one of the parents. Like, so even in some cases, the betrayer has really got a lot of dysfunction in their life. You know, they've had multiple affairs or they're really struggling with lots of different things. And so sometimes the kids kind of feel sorry for that. And so I think, you know, the best advice I could give this person is just to say, hey, I am for them. I love them as God loves me. And, you know, I'm going to have a fatted calf ready for each of them, even if they're prodigals towards me right now. I'm going to love them well. I'm not going to be defined by how they are viewing me, but I'm going to love them well. I'm going to feel hurt and left out.
That's
sad. It's deep sadness, but I'm also going to realize, boy, you know, there's got to be something going on with you know, I'm not sure how many of the kids are doing that to this person, but for the child or two that's now an adult that's doing that, try to, you know, the best advice I can give is try not to be defined by what they're doing, but more defined by what this person wants to do and come towards their kids for the rest of their lives. And because part of what happens in betrayed situations is a person who's doing the betraying, you know, they may kind of talk one way to the kids and a different way to the spouse or to the ex-spouse. That makes sense. So they're really being on their best, if you will, with the kids, and then to their ex-spouse are really being hurtful or, you know, still omitting things or just blaming them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really painful.
Well,
that person's going to say, I just want to empathize with their pain, but I also want to encourage them to know that they are, you know, to love their kids well.
Mm-hmm. Here's another question, Todd. Should someone who is divorced not get married until the kids are grown and out of the house?
Boy, I think each case is different, but I think, you know, there certainly is something about, you know, just being available for your kids and not you know, especially the best thing I could say here is from 12 to 18, the kids are more defined by their peer structure, their youth group, their faith development. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's okay to not have to wait till they're out of the house. But it's important to know that if I'm going to start dating, I also don't want to make dating Grand Central Station, where that's my all in all, mm-hmm. right? I'm still going to love my kids well, but, you know, kids won't listen to us, but they'll eventually imitate us. So if they're pursuing a loving relationship after divorce, it's healthy, that's Christ-centered, and they're still being very available for their kids, I think being for both of those things is okay.
Mm-hmm. Another question, what does Todd say about porn and coming across that in your marriage? How can you heal from that?
Mm.
Betrayal central.
Right. So, again, what's the attitude of the person who has been viewing porn? Do they have remorse for it? Do they have a plan to overcome that? Do they, are they truly authentically sorry? What can they do to create a safe place for their spouse to trust that? Because when they come across that, it is like a betrayal. It is like having an affair.
Mm-hmm.
So the person who might be viewing the porn might not view it like that. But ask any person who's on the receiving end of their spouse viewing porn about how that feels. And to a person, and rightfully so, they feel betrayed.
Wow. All right, that's a big one. All right, Todd, let me ask you this. Here's a question from a listener. How do we discipline ourselves to get up and pray together each morning or spend time in the Word? My wife has been with someone in the past before she got saved. So this is a relationship before coming to faith in Christ, the unregenerate person, the sinner did sinful things, right? And that she really didn't have any love for this person, but she did cheat on him once or twice. And in the back of my mind, I'm always wondering if someone more attractive to her comes along. Should I be concerned?
Boy, what a great question. You know, I just want to validate what that person's feeling. That's really hard. I'd be careful to not live in the fear of the what ifs, even though it's reasonable to think that. I would move from what if thinking to what is true today. And what is true today is I'm for praying and I'm for building my relationship with my spouse. And I have to be careful, because if I'm too defined by what this person has done in the past, then I'm going to be vulnerable to tripping up and maybe getting overprotective or jealous easily, or just being afraid. And when you and I operate out of fear, which would be normal for this person to do, I would be. Mm-hmm. But when we're operating out of that fear, we're more vulnerable either to withdraw or to control, or in that fear just to feel inadequate. And so I want to encourage this person to invite, you know, to make sure they recenter and know they're loved by God and approved and accepted, so that they can take that confidence into their relationship with this person.
Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about the discipline of trying to get up and pray in the morning as well. That was another point.
That was wonderful.
It was a great point, but so I think they're struggling with that too.
Yeah, and maybe I'm off base on this, but I think what's really important is to have both people intentionally before that, and to know that they get to do that. And also to know that if they're on a good roll and they start to do it regularly and they get off the track, to not go into shame and then feel worthless and feel like we've messed it all up, we can never get back.
Mm-hmm.
God is still for them. Get back on it. So I think some of it is knowing your personality. Like if the person that likes to have a plan is married to somebody that's kind of in the moment, we'll understand that about each other. So the person that likes to have a plan would like to pray every morning at 7:12. And the person that's in the moment will go, well, let's just see what the way the Lord leads today, you know? And then we got different time zones and everybody's kind of frustrated. So, but we're both for praying. And so what do we get to do? We get to, the person that's a planner goes, hey, let me go to my spouse's side of the street and just kind of do it in the moment. And the person that's more of a in the moment says, hey, it's really important for my spouse that we do this, you know, at a specific time. Let me come towards them. So it's that important piece of empathy and mutual empathy towards each other, because we're both for praying it up and getting in the Word. We're for mm-hmm. that. So let's not keep score. Let's not worry about who's doing it more or less, or who's always into it or who's not. Let's just be for that idea
mm-hmm.
and get going with it and just start. So I think it does help to plan it. And then, you know, the person that's kind of spontaneous go, okay, well, I can be spontaneous in my prayer, even though we are doing it tomorrow at 7:12 in the morning.
So Todd, when you counsel couples, do you, at the beginning of a relationship, do you ever ask about what their concerns are about betrayal, whether they've had it in the past or whether or not it's something that they're thinking about?
Yeah. So what I tend to do in the pre-marriage stuff, Bill, is talk about, you know, their family of origin. So what patterns did they see growing up that were healthy and unhealthy? What their dating patterns were mm-hmm. before? Have they ever gone through a breakup or a betrayal? And then also their love languages, and then also some enrichment tools about 5-to-1, giving each other 5 affirmations for everyone concerned, creating a safe place to have conflict. But certainly to answer your question specifically, it's really important to know the histories. So I have to know, like, if I've been through betrayal myself, I have to know that, have I done the best I can, that I am choosing to trust my spouse now, so that if he or she is a little bit distanced 1 week, that I don't think, uh-oh, what's going on here? Because that's really from my own story versus what's actually going on. Mm-hmm. So I have to watch my own, if you will, my own trauma mind, and go to Jesus with that and be rest in that and remember what is actually true about me and my spouse.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's harder if the person who went through a betrayal earlier in their life, Bill, actually then gets betrayed again in the marriage. Mm-hmm. That's really hard work.
Yeah.
Hard work for both.
Yeah. If you are on that other side of that betrayal and you have had restoration and you feel like your love has been restored and you want to offer a word of encouragement, send us a text, 877-933-2484, or you can certainly call and talk about it if you like. I know there's many, many people listening to this show right now that are suffering because there's a great pain in their relationship because of betrayal. And it's such a hard word, and Jesus knew all about betrayal. I mean, mm-hmm. he's walked through this, not in a marriage relationship, mm-hmm. but he knows all about betrayal. And we can go right to him with our deepest, darkest pain. Give us a call, though, 877-933-2484. Otherwise, we will take a short break. Todd Mullican is in my studio, and you can go to toddmullican.com. That's M-U-L-L-I-K-E-N. Todd Mullican. Be right back. It is 46 minutes after the hour. Todd Mullican's in my studio. We're talking about a very difficult subject, which is betrayal. And when that happens in relationships, you know, because you either you've experienced it or you know someone well who's gone through it, and you know how heart-wrenching it is and how a person's world just gets turned upside down, Todd, and it just changes the course of life, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And I think on the side of hope for the couple, if we have healthy remorse from the person who had the affair, and that is consistent, steadfast, comes from their own contentment and remorse and repentance, over time,
mm-hmm.
the spouse who's been betrayed hopefully gets to receive that remorse and trust that and start to forgive. And then those are the marriages, in my experience, at least over 30 years of doing this, that if they stick with that and now they start doing their own work, they usually can have, and that's the percentage piece, they can have a marriage that was even deeper because now they've gone through something very difficult, but they've restructured how they want to do life. Because mm-hmm. oftentimes the affair is a symptom, never the answer, okay? But is a symptom of either a characterological problem in a person who's had a pattern of it, either through porn, either through watching parents cheat, either through kind of starting it as being a big deal in high school and once a cheater, always a cheater, or a person who has been building their resentment bank account and slowly is drifting from their spouse and falls in love with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it's important for that person who's had the affair to recognize that the marriage didn't deserve this.
So what kind of people might be most vulnerable to an affair?
Yeah, so for sure that double life person, if you will, the person who's had multiple affairs,
okay.
If they don't ever understand why they're cheating typically to, you know, cope with some kind of abandonment they felt, or they saw a parent do it, and so now they're mm-hmm. overcompensating, they're doing
sure.
it. So that kind of person is vulnerable for sure, whether it originated with porn, originated with a parent that was cheating, originated with some kind of betrayal they felt earlier. Now they're overcompensating. That person's vulnerable. The other person is really vulnerable, though, that I've noticed is that, if you will, that people pleaser type that's been enduring, and not addressing the stuff in the marriage that needs to be addressed. They avoid the mess versus address the mess. And through that avoidance, every day unintentionally, they're kind of going to that resentment bank and throwing a few nickels in. And now they meet somebody at work or at their high school reunion after 30 years, and now they feel like, oh, that person asked me about me, or, geez, they seem interested in me. And the pleaser's always been defined by how others think of them. And that person is very vulnerable to an affair, so they need to get busy, in my opinion, receiving their validation from God, not others, and get busy coming towards their spouse with what's going on and how they're feeling so they can let their spouse in. So those are the two types of folks in general that are most vulnerable. And this new book I'm writing is called Being Right Versus Being Liked, The Impact of Narcissism and Codependency on Couples and Families. So I do think the couple that's really vulnerable to an affair is that couple with that dynamic where one person's more controlling, because then they kind of want what they want. They want what they want when they want it, and are more vulnerable to that multiple cheating. And the person who's pleaser-based is more vulnerable to that one-time affair that really can just define their life. It's kind of that midlife crisis they have, Bill, where it completely shifts their life.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the forgiveness in this process, because it seems that the one who was betrayed would call all the forgiveness shots.
Yeah. Yeah,
I have that right?
You do. And so it's an important piece. And it's also important to know that what is the truth? Is the truth that the person who's had the affair is just sorry because they got caught? Or are they sorry because they really can understand the impact of that betrayal? And in my opinion, if they understand the impact of the betrayal, then they will, allow or have leave plenty of time, plenty of room for their spouse to battle with forgiveness. But I think both people need to be very swift at recognizing they are forgiven by God. Are they forgiving themselves, and are they forgiving each other? And so the person who's been betrayed also needs to see the value of forgiveness, so they aren't defined by this action that's happened to them. Because the lack of forgiveness ends up over time really enhancing the trauma. It's enhancing the feelings of betrayal without it meaning to. Does that make sense? So by not pursuing forgiveness, they actually will unintentionally be building more of being defined by this act that has happened to them versus releasing the injured party, so that they know in Jesus they get to have their life full again.
Mm-hmm. So, Todd, when you think of words like trust, honesty, time, these are words that, you know, you put as the sacred elements to a covenant called marriage. So when these get shattered, how are these rebuilt? Or can they only be rebuilt to a certain degree? Can they ever be better than they ever were? Or
right, and that's
what is God going to be? What can God do in these relationships?
Well, and you know, frankly speaking, you're right. A lot of these marriages and research shows that they don't recover very well.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that do, and again, I'm not trying to make these people sound like better people or something.
Right.
But the ones that do are really open to looking at their own side of the street in Christ, to look at what are they learning about their story in Jesus, about what's happened here. So the person who's done the betraying, what caused me to do this, Lord? How did I fall, away from you? How is this pattern I repeated? What's going on for me here? And that's the deep work that needs to be done. The person who's been betrayed and sees their spouse really being remorseful, what's preventing me, Lord, from coming towards my spouse? Not overnight, but over time. What's that about for me? Does that make sense? So are both people looking in their own mirror and being accountable for their own peace to move towards each other over time? And that's when the deeper work happens, and that's when, you know, the trust gets even better than ever was, because now they've got a safe place to do what I call let each other in versus take things out on each other. So I realize, hey, my vulnerability as a people pleaser, I wanted to receive external validation from this person at work. That was why I did it. Honey, it's not about you. You are amazing. This is all on me. The person who was cheated on goes, I see that in their story. But if they take it to the fact that they never forgive that person, and really that act that that person did to them has now defined them, versus saying, hey, I understand where this came from. I understand that my partner was vulnerable to it because of their need for external validation, for example. Mm-hmm. And so that's what the betrayed person gets to do, is increase understanding. Not, again, not rushing through it. You know, because some people, you know, some Christians will say, well, you just got to rush through. You got to forgive them. You got to go. You got to do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and when you rush through trauma, it's not healthy.
Yeah. Todd, what do friends do right? What do friends do wrong when they're come alongside someone that's been betrayed?
That's been betrayed, to listen to validate, listen to understand, let them release from their time zone all of the stuff that has just happened, because they're just trying to put all the pieces together. So don't fix, don't manage, don't parent, you know, pray together, but do a lot of listening, as James says, you know, quick to listen. So a lot of listening, a lot of understanding, and then walk alongside and know like it's going to be a journey, and I'm walking alongside. I'm not their social worker, mm-hmm. but I am their deep friend in Christ. So what they do right is listen, validate, walk along, and then gentle challenges. If, you know, a year or two in, there's still an intense lack of forgiveness, and the truth is the spouse is doing their part. So they're not the marriage counselor, but they're a loving friend. So what they do wrong is trying to fix, manage, protect, stay completely away, or try to get right in the middle of everything. Yeah. So the extremes are bad.
What about if the temptation is to bash that betrayer?
Yeah.
Should you be careful not to be that?
I think so. Yeah. I think there's enough. Yeah. Because again, what's the truth? If the truth is the person is still betraying and doesn't feel sorry, you know, you can bash away. But at the end of the day, what am I going to do as the betrayed person? So I'm not defined by this person continuing to do this to me. How am I setting boundaries to remove myself from the situation? Mm-hmm. And if the truth is the person is really sorry for what they've done, then bashing is going to be, you know, doubly hurtful.
Yeah. A listener wanted to know, should the count it all joy philosophy apply to relationships? In that passage in James,
yeah, for sure.
Count it all joy.
Yeah. I mean, I think in a perfect world, you know, in James being the younger brother of Jesus, you know, I want to be like waking up next to Jesus every day.
That'd be kind of cool.
Right. So, yeah. And so anyway, yeah, I think you count it all joy, meaning that, and joy in my mind is more about that contentment, that, you know, what's going on in my adventure here in Jesus, and how am I leaning into him and trying to understand what's happened.
Yeah.
And the people that really do the deep work, that's when actually on the other side of the betrayal, they feel stronger.
Yeah.
Again, they wouldn't wish it on anybody. But
what about triggers?
Yeah, triggers
that
are normal.
That person that's trying to heal from the...
Triggers aren't a setback.
They're not. Say more about that.
So triggers are just a natural part of going through a traumatic experience. They have 4 good weeks in a row, Bill. They're crushing it as a couple. Mm-hmm. The person who's had the affair is going, boy, we're getting there, you know? And then mm-hmm. boom, something happens. A song comes on the radio. A smell's in the air. A year anniversary. Mm-hmm. Moments come up. It's not a setback. I always tell that couple, it's not a setback to be triggered. It's more a time to provide healing. It's a chemo day. We've gotten rid of the cancer, but we're for each other still because we are healing. And I, as the betrayer, I'm just going to comfort here and listen. And that's not a setback. I'm going to for sure not to be defensive. And the person who's had I remember a few times ago when I was on here, somebody had texted in about, you know, they feel bad that they still have anger about the betrayal that happened a while ago. They're not always angry, but once in a while they'll get, something will spark that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and God can provide comfort in that versus feeling ashamed that I'm angry. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah. Todd Mullican's been my guest. His website is toddmullican.com, and that's MULLIKEN, toddmullican.com. If you want to go learn more about Todd. Todd, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Bill.
Yeah, it's always nice to have you here.
It's great to be here.
That wraps up our show. I hope you enjoyed the show today, and tell your friends about us if they're looking for a radio station to hear conversation that is not argumentative, but hope-filled, and talks about spirituality and Jesus, and maybe they're just at the point where they want to learn more about God, and this would be a good way to help them in their faith journey as well. You can send them right over to myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening. Have a great night, everyone. Just lay your head on that pillow tonight and just be reminded God is working out his great plan in your life. See you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.